McWilliams Cyberline, 844-RADIO-US, 844-RADIO-US, HUS2020 at cyber-line.com, facebook.com/cyberlinenet, and of course the Tweety at cyberlineusa. So anyway, we were getting ready for the show, and you know, the rock star was on, doing his thing.
The rock star?
You know rock star.
The rock star?
Hey, this is Billy the rock star! And he had a sex therapist on.
Okay.
He's talking about, you know, things that sex therapists and DJs talk about. Didn't have much time to listen to it because we were too busy getting ready to come on the air.
Did they talk about the new locked folders on Google?
No, I don't think they got to that. So, Bob, that's your territory there. I don't think Billy got that far. But we have this nice little article from Deutsche Welle that's posted on the Cyberline page, and it's called Let's Talk About Sex in Space. And it's one of the things in exploration remains taboo, and here's what we do and don't know about cosmic sex. Now, there's always been rumors about sex, especially now that there's an astronaut women corps and we have co-ed people going up and everything. So there's this one guy, he's getting ready to go, his German astronaut Matthias Maurer, breezes through interviews, rarely missing a beat when he answers journalist questions around his upcoming 6 months trip to the ISS. But one topic throws even him off momentarily, sex drive in space. We have not talked about this because it is a professional environment, he replied to DW's questions on whether astronauts exchange insights on how to handle their desires. So thanks to commercial spaceflight, more people are entering the cosmos than ever before. And of course, you know, SpaceX launched 4 tourists through the Earth's orbit. 10 years from now, the first crew of astronauts will likely set off on a mission to Mars, could last multiple years. Sexuality is intrinsic to human nature and inevitably factors into space missions. But while space science is progressing, our understanding of sex in space is still basic. NASA insists that no humans have had sex in space, and American astronauts famously avoid the topic. The few experiences that have been conducted on space sex focused on animals and not humans. And he says, we need to know more about about sexuality in space if we are serious about long-duration space flights. Sexuality is very possibly going to be a part of that, according to Paul Root Wolpel, who spent 15 years as a senior bioethicist at NASA. So, you know, sex in space does matter. And addressing sexuality in space isn't just important because it's what's on everybody's mind, but as part of an astronaut's training. Matthias Maurer replied, no, but maybe it should be. So if you look at sexual health as a core component of health, it's important to understand the conditions they're putting individuals in, sort of Sarah Lynn Mark, former senior medical advisor at NASA. I'm not going to go with that line. Oh, I'm not going to go with those two lines.
Okay.
It's about mechanics, and we're not going to go there.
Yeah, you could do your Dr. Ruth voice. I mean,
well, we could go that way, yes. sex is linked to physical and mental health that doesn't change in space. This thing we can talk about is essential for men to avoid the risk of bacteria building up in the prostate. And the things that both of them do that we can talk about have been shown to relieve stress and anxiety, as well as improve sleep quality, which likely helps during a high, very high pressure space mission.
Thank you, Dr. Ruth. We'll phone. So we can only speculate that it seems likely that sex in space has already happened. There are 2 space missions that jump out as candidates. In 1982, Russian cosmonaut Svetlana Stravinskaya, the second ever woman in space, joined the Soyuz T-7 space mission for 8 days. 2 male colleagues were already on board when she arrived, making it the first co-ed space mission. In his book, translated from German to English, A Hell Ride Through Time and Space, man, that's a hell of a title, German astronaut Ulrich Walter notes that according to the team's doctor, Oleg Girovanovich Gazenko, the flight was planned with a sexual encounter in mind. Now, the second mission in question took place in 1992, when NASA's Space Shuttle Endeavour was launched with a married couple on board, Mark Lee and Jan Davis. Both astronauts met at NASA. They married in secret a year before liftoff, and the joint flight to space was practically their honeymoon.
Hmm.
So, how does it differ from here versus up there? So if we can assume that sex is space in a reality, but how is it different on Earth? So here's the basics. First off, sex drive. The little publicly available information that they have indicates that being in space leads to reduced libido, at least at first. And that's because microgravity, the weightless astronauts experience in space, causes hormonal changes, like decrease in estrogen. Low estrogen levels have been linked to a drop in sex drive. But here's the problem. Mostly what we know about hormones comes only from tests in men, because there's only 11.5% of astronauts are female, and a relatively few women who have been to space opted to go on birth control beforehand. So that makes it tricky to disentangle artificial hormone changes from those caused by spaceflight. And also, and this is fascinating, another factor in cosmic sex drive is the change in the astronaut's internal clock. So says Sarilyn Mark, when you're going around the planet right now every 90 minutes, your circadian rhythms are altered, and that alters everything, including your sex hormones and probably your libido. The science also matches astronaut Walter's on-site experience. In his book, he writes that during his 10 short days in space, he had no libido. But there's hope. According to Walter, astronaut sex drive does readjust after a few weeks in space. So while the knowledge of sex drive is still fuzzy, we have a much clearer picture on whether humans can get physically aroused in space. Microgravity causes blood flow to reverse its course and moves upwards toward the head and chest instead of circulating the lower half of the body. The internet abounds with speculation on whether this prevents men from, you know, doing stuff in space. So as to whether spaced stuff is viable, Mark gave a clear answer. Yes, microgravity does not affect that path. Root Wolpert agreed. There is no reason why it should be biologically impossible. So Ron Grorn, American astronaut who went to space twice, was asked whether that thing was possible in space on an Ask Me Anything Reddit thread. Yeah, let's go there on Reddit, shall we?
Reddit.
He says, I know of nothing that happens to the human body on Earth that can't happen in space. So for women, arousal in space is possible as well, but getting feels physically different than on planet Earth. Oh, man, where's Dr. Ruth? Zero gravity. No, I'm not going to go there. Oh, Velcro. Okay, so now you got to go speculation about the act itself. Sex in space is far more exhausting endeavor than here on Earth. In zero gravity, Newton's third law. Yeah, I believe in that. Newton's third law in sexual humanity, which states that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction, makes thrusting against each other a real challenge. We don't realize how much gravity assists us in the act. It involves pressure. In space, without any counterforce, you end up constantly trying to push your partner away from you. In an interview with German public broadcaster NDR, Walter suggested that astronauts could adapt a method employed by dolphins in the ocean, where a third party holds the other two together to prevent them from drifting. Okay, so now there's a third person involved. They also have, okay. Well, maybe a better idea. Everything on the walls of the station is covered in Velcro, so you could take advantage of that by Velcroing one partner to the wall. Yeah, you have to get creative in space.
Okay.
So I think that just upped the sex therapist by one.
Yeah, well, you know, we've got all these new civilians that are going to be flying up there soon. I mean,
and let's be brutally honest. I mean, you know, we joke about it. We talk about it. It's I don't know which is worse. When we were growing up in the older years and sex was taboo, or now here we're talking about space. No, we're not talking about that. No, we don't put sex and space together. You're going to have to sometime, just like you had the talk before. You're going to have to do it because has yeah. people. Okay, what was so funny about that?
I'm sorry, being serious. having the talk about space sex. I just think it's a little bit more humorous.
We can write a new book along with Dr. Ruth called "Sex in Space." And wait a minute, it's Birds and Bees in Zero G. There you go. There's the title: Birds and Bees.
Birds and Bees.
G's.
Yeah,
that's our new book from Cyberline Press: Birds, Bees, and Zero G. So. But, yeah, you're going to have to talk about it because there are going to be long flights in space. People are going to be cooped up together, going to want to, you know, do the Martian Mambo or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And at the same time, you're going to go space stations, build cities, live on other planets, and you're going to have to adapt to populate the species. So, yes, this will have to be addressed. They had a few things in there I had to cut out, not because of FCC reasons, but I don't want to do the full Dr. Ruth thing.
All right, I understand, yeah.
But anyway, you get the drift. And that's something that we're going to have to come up with and learn about through experiments or whatever it takes. I'm curious to see how this Velcro thing works, especially, I guess, if you have a compartment, because generally they have like a sleep pod where you're strapped in and because you're floating and then you like zip yourself in or up or whatever. I guess there's something there that could be modified for Velcro or whatever. Or, you know, I'll have to look at the drawing board. But anyway, rather fascinating. Rather fascinating.
Yes, I think so.
So.
Well, I've got different stories to talk about if we're...
I'm sure you do. Probably need a cigarette after talking about that one.
Yeah. So, just to bring up a different story, Amazon hits over 600 Chinese electronic brands with the ban hammer.
Oh, no.
Matthew Lee over at TechSpot had reported that Amazon has so far shut down 3,000 online merchants linked to 600 Chinese electronics brands sold on its online sales platform as part of an ongoing campaign against paid feedback and similar activities. Although Amazon officially banned incentivized reviews in 2016, its current crusade against such practices beginning with the high-profile booting of familiar names like Aoki and RavPower from their platform earlier this year is more expansive than anything done prior. In an interview on Chinese Central TV, Cindy Tay, Amazon's vice president of for Asia Global Selling, also stated that the crackdown was not intentionally targeted towards China or any other country, or the overall growth of Chinese online merchants selling via Amazon. However, the South China Morning Post had previously reported that the industry had been grievously affected to the tune of $15.4 billion between lost sales, blocked funds, and withheld inventory. Customers rely on the accuracy and authenticity of product reviews to make informed purchasing decisions, and we have clear policies for both reviewers and selling partners that prohibit abuse of our community features, Amazon stated, adding that the company will continue to improve abuse detection and take enforcement action against bad actors, including those that knowingly engage in multiple and repeated policy violations, including review abuse. And frankly, that kind of thing is something that I'm really, I do appreciate because, you know, I depend on reviews on whenever I'm buying a product to know whatever is going on with them. Frankly, a lot of times the first thing I do is go to the one-star reviews when I'm trying to buy a product,
yeah,
only to see what someone else thinks the negative is about it. And I might just go, you know, I might buy into what they say. A lot of times if they say, I got the product and it didn't work. It, you know, I hit the power button and it never turned on. You know, I'm like going, okay, I get that. Maybe that's a legit review. Maybe it's just an angry customer. Those are the ones that I discount a little bit because that can happen to anybody. And I can, you know, on something like that, I'll just return the product. It's not that big a deal to me.
Yeah.
It's rare that that happens to me, that I've had to return a product, but on occasion I do. Overall, I like to read the reviews that say something like, well, you know, overall the sound quality was not that great, or, you know, the volume was low all the time. And when I read something like that, I think, okay, there's a little bit more legitimacy to the item. It's just all the ones that say that the product broke after a month. Usually I'm not really, you know, products break, electronics break nowadays. So I'm not as into reviewing, you know, those types of reviews as I am into others.
Yeah, I tend to take a grain of salt with the reviews, especially the ones that, you know, talk terrible about it. It's like, well, did you do anything about it? No. Okay. Moving right along.
And, you know, I'll also look through, the other thing I like to do with the reviews is maybe I am looking for a particular piece of information. A lot of the reviews answer, you know, they have a lot of questions in there that get answered. So I might go in and I type in maybe volume or something like that if I'm looking to find out if there's issues with the volume or sound quality, or, you know, I know I'm talking about speakers or something like that right now, but there's so many other things that I might be looking at to understand weight or dimensions or capacities. Sometimes you don't find those in the specs. I mean, they should be, most of that stuff should be there, but occasionally they don't put that stuff in there, and they'll answer these types of questions in there. A little bit different, I guess, than the reviews, but still very important information to pull in from overall product pricing, the whole product description. So, yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be saying goodbye to the boss. Listen to McWilliams Cyberline. Okay, McWilliams Cyberline with you. I'm not going to give out the numbers right now because it's the end of the show. So anyway, I'm going to bring the bumper down a little bit here because I want to tell you a few things. I've been doing this show with USA Radio Network since June of 2000 and went up about 2014 or so. And there were some things that happened with the network and then changed hands. And there was a little wilderness part there. And we came back. Charlie Jones and I have been here since. And I'm kind of the old guard, I guess you would call the 1.0. So I've seen a lot of things happen. And we also lost our creator at that time, the USA Radio Network's creator, Marlon Maddox. And, of course, times change. It's a new USA Radio, I think very much so, a better USA Radio, because we've done a lot of new and wonderful things since Marlon's time. And Marlon was the guy that started it all. And the guy that picked up the baton was Fred Weinberg. And Fred, when I came here, is an amazing man, a heck of a passion for radio. And gosh, stories. Amazing stories that went on. And also our vice president, Janet Bro, they've known each other for a long time and done stuff all over the place and radio stations, everything, and of course, now with this network. Sadly, Fred Weinberg, our guy, our boss, our brother in radio, he passed away September 23rd in Reno, Nevada after a short illness. Fred was born in Albuquerque, March 17, 1952. He was the son of Philip and Rose Weinberg. Dr. Weinberg moved the family out to Peoria, Illinois, that famous, you know, will it play in Peoria, back in 56 when he joined the faculty of Bradley University. Fred attended Richwood High School, developed a love of photography and sports reporting. He flew with the Civil Air Patrol, worked as a stringer for the Journal Star before heading off to college at Southern Illinois University. He returned to Peoria to study journalism at Bradley, and he became involved with WCBU, the campus radio station, where he was a station manager. He took a brief detour from broadcasting in 75, careers at the Penny Press Peoria newspaper, E.F. Hutton, and ownership of Three Worlds Disco. He tried his hand in the oil business, did a stint with ABC TV, before deciding to get back into the business he loved, and that was radio. Fred owned stations in Claremore, Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Las Vegas, Nevada. He put together a chain of small radio stations across Nevada where our buddy Wyatt Cox is out there taking care of those before joining the USA Radio Network in 2018. And he, 2016. And he bought the business out in 2018 and ran into the CEO until recently after his until his untimely death. USA Radio Network, the network that you are listening to my voice on right now, provides long-form radio shows and news to more than 400 stations across the country. They also run stations in Dallas, Phoenix, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and they own our Dallas station, our flagship right here that you're listening to us from, KBDT. Weinberg also published Penny Press Nevada, conservative weekly online newspaper, worked with the Nevada Republican Party in his spare time. He was known to broadcasters, politicians across the country, boisterous and often opinionated, always had a deal working. Two cell phones and a laptop. My boys and girls, I have seen it happen. Stuck with him through many stations and opportunities. He almost seemed to have it attached to his body. He was loyal to a fault. We went through all sorts of stuff with him, and employees stuck with him throughout many stations, opportunities, good and bad, and with those cell phones, laptop, he was always working constantly. He met his wife, Charlotte Allade, in Las Vegas in 1999. They married in Hawaii in 2004. She survives him as well as his stepchildren, Randy and Stephen Allard, both in Reno. And he's also survived by sisters Susan Weinberg and Andrea Weinberg Chestnut, two nieces and two great nephews. Memorial service will be held at a later date, but I just want to tell you that Fred was a great guy. And my journeys of broadcasting, as you know, not too long ago, I celebrated my 40th anniversary. And so, Fred, wherever you are, buddy, tonight we are going to break open some original Dublin Dr. Pepper. Yeah, I know you like cherry Dr. Pepper, but we're going to do some Dublin Dr. Pepper, and we're going to hail that for you in your honor. Godspeed, Fred Weinberg, wherever you are, and may you make the electrons dance in the universe for many years to come. All right, folks, that's it. We're going to be back next week, and until then, in the words of the great immortal Orson Welles, we remain, as always, obediently yours. Good night.